talk of this first advent of God coming into the world through Jesus, but rather the second advent of his return, coming at the end of time. And this text is hard for us. It's difficult. This is not a text that lends itself to sugar plums dancing in our minds as we think that Advent and Christmas is all about. It's about the end times. It's about a different kind of time in our life. And this is the way that Luke puts it. He says, at that time they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. That's mysterious language. It's hard to know what to make of this. But I think it's meant to be mysterious language. This language of the cloud and Jesus coming upon the earth in a cloud. We see this language a lot, in fact, if we're to trace through the Bible and see where does God show up and how does God show up and what about this cloud? Well, in Revelation chapter 1, it tells us that God will come to the world in a cloud. That's the end of the Bible. You go practically to the beginning of the Bible in Exodus, and we have God showing up on Mount Sinai, there giving the Ten Commandments to Moses, and he comes to Moses amidst a great cloud. We find it elsewhere in the Bible. We see the tabernacle in the wilderness, and we're told that at the tabernacle, that God's very mysterious and holy presence comes in the form of a cloud. We're told that in Exodus 40. In Leviticus 16, the very next chapter, we have God showing up in a cloud that encases the mercy seat upon the Ark of the Covenant, God's very presence there. We see Solomon dedicating the first temple in 1 Kings chapter 8, and we see this great cloud of God's very presence that comes upon the temple at the day of dedication. Well, that's the Old Testament. What about the New? Well, it's on the Mount of Transfiguration in Matthew chapter 17 that Jesus is taking three of his disciples. They go up upon the mountain. Jesus is transfigured before them, meaning that his clothes become bright and shining like they've never seen on earth before. And then we're told a cloud envelops them. And from this cloud comes a voice that says, "This is my beloved Son. Listen to him." We understand that to be God's voice coming amidst a cloud. Interesting, isn't it? That God speaks from the cloud. Now, these days, if you were to talk about the cloud, you wouldn't necessarily think about the heavenly bodies. You would think about Microsoft and Amazon and how we store our data in the cloud, how we're now doing our work in the cloud, right? That's what we think these days. Now, you know that when your data is stored in the cloud, we're not talking about those fluffy things that are floating above us, right? Your data is not stored up in heaven. You know that. That these are servers that Microsoft and Amazon and other companies like them keep all around the world in order to store your data. That's what we mean by the cloud. Well, the day is going to come when God is going to be in control of all of it. Not Microsoft, not Amazon, not Google, or anything else. But the cloud is going to be a time in which God comes and shows ownership over all things. That's really what the cloud is representing. I saw a cartoon a while ago. It was two Martians who were coming to visit the Earth. And one says to the other, "You know, I just read this interesting report that the Earth used to be inhabited by humans. But back in 2012, they all moved to the cloud." They were a bit confused by all of that. Well, we talk about the cloud differently these days, of course, than the Bible talks about the cloud. But the Bible's talking about a time in which God will control all the clouds. All clouds everywhere will be under God's control. So what about this text then for today? This first Sunday of Advent, this text that talks about Jesus coming in the cloud with great power and glory, what does that mean for our lives? Well, I think it means a couple of things. First of all, I think it means this. I think that we as Christians, of all other people, can actually look forward to the future. We can look forward to the future because we are a people who have great hope and expectation for what is coming into the world. The Bible says that the creation groans for what is about to take place. Not what Microsoft or Amazon or Google or Apple are going to do next. That's not what the world is groaning for. The world is groaning for what God is going to do next. See, we are people who believe that the future belongs to God. You know, in the Old Testament, people longed for the coming of the Messiah. We see this longing throughout the Old Testament, especially in places like Isaiah. People longed for the coming of the Messiah. And in the New Testament, we see again a longing for God's inbreaking into this world through the coming of Jesus. The second time, the second revelation, the final reappearing of God into the world. You know, when Jesus ascended into heaven, he didn't leave the world. We are not absent of God. He is still with us, though behind a veil that separates the temporal from the eternal. The day will come when that veil is gone. There are times, of course, when that veil becomes very thin, and we can see across from one to the other. But there is still that veil. But the day will come when that veil will disappear, and we long for his reappearing. We long for that day, and we live with the expectant hope of that happening. I find it interesting in our text, if you have a careful reading of the text today, that you're going to see all these terrible things that are foretold of. The sun, the moon, the stars, the heavenly beings, shaking and coming apart, the waves being tossed. And it says, the people will faint in fear. But you, when these things take place, raise your heads and know that your redemption is drawing near. It's a contrast between people and you. Now, the same things are happening for people and for you. But remember, Luke is addressing this letter, as much of the New Testament is being addressed, to a church that's being persecuted. The church was in a hard time, and they were experiencing all kinds of suffering and distress. So when the author is putting these materials together, they're talking to a church that needs some comfort. The world is going to faint. They're going to fall away. They're not going to know what to make of all of this. But you, when these things take place, you can raise your hands. You can have hope because this is a sign that God is fulfilling his promises. So you can look forward to the future. You can have great expectation for the future. You do not need to cower about the future because God is going to make good on his word. God has made promises to you, his people, and those will be fulfilled. Isn't that good news? There was a preacher in Chicago years ago by the name of Dwight Moody, perhaps one of the best street preachers ever in Chicago. He ended up creating what's known as the Moody Bible Institute, has trained a lot of people over the years. Well, years ago, he told a story about a member of a church that he was a part of who lived in a tenement hall in Chicago. It was a very poor building, a very poor situation. She was financially quite distressed. There was another woman from the church who was going to visit her one day and was going to bring with her a second woman from the church who was from a very wealthy Chicago family. They went to visit this parishioner of the church, and they got to the building, and you could just tell the building was very distressed, very poor. It was a very difficult situation. They walked inside, and the second woman said to the first woman, "Wow, I mean, this is really sad. This is... Boy, I mean, somebody lives in this from our church? I can't imagine." And the woman who brought her along says, "It's okay. It gets better the higher you go." Okay. So they went up to the second floor, and they got to the second floor, and it seemed to only get worse. There was spray painting on the walls. There was garbage in the hallway. And she said, "I don't think it's getting better." She goes, "Oh, no, no. It gets better the higher up you go." Well, they get to the third floor. Again, it's only getting worse. Finally, they get to the fifth floor where this woman lived. They walked inside her apartment, and the apartment was a bit in shambles. A very poor woman. But this woman was so faith-filled and so loving. She laid there in her bed, and she saw them come in, and she just almost glowed with sort of this faithful optimism of the world in which she lived. And while they went there to give her some comfort and some hope, you know how these things go, sometimes the reverse takes place. They came in and the second woman comes up to her and says, in all sincerity, with great care, says, I'm so sorry for the situation that you find yourself in. This has to be really hard. But the woman lying there in the bed looked at her and with a smile and also a glow on her face says, oh no, the higher you go, the better it gets. You see, she had hope. She had a belief in her heart of hearts that this is not all that there is. And that hope and that optimism for what was yet to come shaped the way in which she saw the reality that she found herself in under those present circumstances. It makes all the difference if we believe that the higher we go, the better it gets. It really makes a difference. Now, we don't know right now at this moment what God is up to. But I know this. God is up to something good. He's up to something good for you and for me. Because as I trace what God has been up to throughout the scriptures, and in my own life, as I take a look at my own life and what God has done in my life, I can only say before you today that God is up to something good. Now, we're trying to figure out when God's promises are finally going to be revealed, right? So we're trying to read the signs, according to the Bible, in the fig trees or other signs that are out there. People have been trying to do this for centuries, trying to figure out, God, when are you going to fulfill the promises you've made? When is all of this going to take place? When are you going to come back and redeem your people? And people have been trying to put a date on it and try to figure it all out. We can't do that. Jesus says even the angels don't know. Jesus says even I don't know. Only the Father knows. So quit hitting your head against the wall, trying to figure it out. You can't figure it out. But you have to live now with the understanding that the promises will be fulfilled, that God will make good on his word, that he is up to something, even at this moment, that is going to benefit you and me because he loves us that way. So the first thing we can believe as Christians because of this text in our Advent text is that God is doing a good thing and that we can have a positive view of the future. The second thing is this, that God does not forsake or forget his own. He does not forsake or forget his own. As I mentioned, the people that received this word and most of the New Testament were being persecuted. Nero was rounding them up, right? He was imprisoning them. He was accusing them of a great fire in Rome. Domitian was throwing them to the lions. They were being persecuted because of their faith in Jesus. This was the church in the first couple of centuries. And it was a very, very difficult situation. So most of the New Testament, including our text for today, comes to the church with this message. Hang on. I haven't forgotten about you. I've not forsaken you. I still see you, and I'm still working on your behalf. What a wonderful message that must have been to those early Christians, that God had not forgotten them, that he had not forsaken them. Now, today we lit our first Advent candle. Today is a day for lighting candles. Not only in the Christian church, our Christian churches all over the world lighting an Advent candle, but our Jewish friends are also lighting their first Hanukkah candle this very evening. Tonight is the first evening, first day or first night. Their day starts at sundown, so tonight is their first day of Hanukkah. Well, Hanukkah is just a time of remembering exactly what we're remembering, that God doesn't forget us, that he still works on our behalf. You know the story of Hanukkah, don't you? It was a couple of centuries before Jesus. Jerusalem had been under siege, not by the Romans yet, but by the Greeks. And the Maccabees, which was sort of a zealot group of Jewish fighters, fought against this Greek oppression and fought off these Syrian Greeks so that they liberated Jerusalem. And they were very excited about that. And so they went to the altar where they were worshiping, and they wanted to light the candle. The candle that represented God's presence among his people. But the problem was they had no candles. All the candles under the occupation had been burned or stolen or were gone. But they had a little lamp. And they had just enough pure olive oil to put it into that little lamp to burn for one day. It would take 8 days for them to manufacture enough other olive oil for them to burn in their lamp. But they thought they needed that light to burn until they got other oil to replace it with. They didn't know what to do, so they prayed, God, would you continue to show your presence here among your people until we're able to get more oil? They put in just that little amount of olive oil, just enough for one day. And wouldn't you know, that candle continued to burn, not for that one day, not for two or three, but for that entire period of 8 days, until they were able to then replenish it with other olive oil that they had manufactured. God showed them through this little miracle that he was there with them, that his presence would not leave them, that he would not forsake them, that he would be with them even when they didn't have enough olive oil at that time. You know, all of us are going to go through times in our life that are uncertain, times that are dangerous and difficult. But the message of the Bible is this: God remembers you. God knows you. God hears your voice. God cares for you in your most dire of circumstances. And because of that, we can live with great expectation. We know that we have a positive future, that God has a future in mind for us. We know that we can live as people who are secure in the love of our Father. Finally, I think what this text tells us today is this: we can live in the victory that God has won for us right now, even though that victory has not yet completely been won just yet. Let me say a little bit more about that. Theologians call this it's sort of an interesting kind of phrase, but they call it realized eschatology. Realized eschatology is when you can live now in a promise, even though that promise has not been yet completely fulfilled. In other words, tomorrow's joys can be for you today's realities. Let me give you an example of this. When I was a kid, I was a bit of a handful. I'll just say that. A bit of a handful. Okay? You know some kids who are handfuls? Yeah, I was one of them. So when we got Christmas presents at home, my parents would quickly wrap them, because I would always tend to find them before they got wrapped and see what they were. But my parents would quickly wrap them. Well, that never deterred me. And when my mom wasn't around, I would peek inside things and see what they were. And one year I remember in particular, my mom and dad had gotten me a Christmas gift that meant a lot to me. And it was very hard for them to disguise it with gift wrap. It was a set of golf clubs. And I remember finding that hiding in my dad's closet, already wrapped up and everything, and my name was on it, and I would take out these golf clubs, and I would peek inside, and I would hold it, I would rattle it, you know the sound of golf clubs. I knew what it was. And I would sit there and I would look at it. Of course, this is in Minnesota. It's cold out. There's no golf courses in Minnesota in the winter, right? These are cross-country ski ranges in the winter, right? Not golf courses. But I would imagine, as I was holding those golf clubs, I would imagine myself in short sleeves, feeling the warmth of the sun, imagining myself hitting a golf ball down the fairway. I was holding those golf clubs. And even though they weren't mine yet, right? I hadn't unveiled them. The unveiling of those golf clubs wouldn't happen until Christmas. But that package had my name on it. I was already, even though it had not even yet been given to me to unwrap, I still lived with the reality that this was mine. I was beginning to enjoy the gift of the golf clubs even before I got to open them. That's realized eschatology. God has made a promise to you. The victory is yours, even though he has not yet completely won that victory. But the promise of that victory is secure. It has your name on it, which means you can even right now begin to live in the reality of the joy of that promised gift that he is going to give to you. That's what he has given to you. That's what it's all about. Right now, you can live in the wonder, majesty, and victory that has even yet to be accomplished. What a wonderful thing that is. So welcome to Advent. Welcome to a season of keeping watch and being awake, of hopeful anticipation and expectation for what is yet to come. There was a A woman I read about recently that lived in Louisiana, she was a domestic worker. She did not make very much money. But this woman, over the course of years, chose to take on as many as a dozen foster children to raise as her own. Somebody asked her, "Why would you do that? Why would you take on all these foster children, considering your own circumstances?" She said, "Because I know that a new world is a-coming. I know a new world is a-coming." And see, she was already living in to the new world that she was able to envision. And because she was living into a reality that was yet to actually take place here on earth, because she was already beginning to live in that, she was beginning to treat others as if that reality was already present. It didn't matter if she didn't have enough money. She had enough love in her heart and enough belief in the future to begin to care for people now, realizing that God would take care of the rest. The Bible tells us that Jesus is going to come in the clouds with great power and great glory. It's not Microsoft's cloud that we can rely on, or Amazon's, or anybody else's cloud. It's the cloud that Jesus will come on. And when that cloud comes, all the bad in this world is going to be swept away, leaving nothing but his love, his grace, and his mercy behind. And he will take all of his children in this world unto himself, and he will wipe away every tear, and joy will reign throughout the world. That's his promise. His promise for you and for me. Let's begin to live in that promise even today. Amen.